Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Live right here on SportsGrid. This is the early line, hour number 2 on a Tuesday. Kevin Walsh. Donnie Wright side continuing to talk about some of the top headlines around the NFL. And a surprising one, Donnie, that came out over the weekend is Sean Payton contemplating moving on from New Orleans. But in what way? Could it be to Dallas? Perhaps the booth and calling games on Fox? There's a lot of interesting stuff to kind of dissect here, DRS. The hot or not was lined up about whether or not he should leave New Orleans, but we can really just kind of spin this in its natural state. What's your reaction to everything going on here with Sean Payton?
It's kind of interesting because it's one of those coaches, Kevin, that you never really had to think about leaving New Orleans. Like, that's Bill Belichick. Do you ever think about, like, hey, man, Bill would love it in San Francisco, or boy, he could rebuild Jacksonville and take on a whole new, you know, brand new operation? No. These guys are just synonymous with their organization, and he's had massive success, including a Super Bowl championship. Should they have more? Maybe if a referee call changes it up, maybe an extra, you know, W in his pocket with another ring? Maybe. But you're also talking about guys that have built that foundation to the franchise and are the franchise. You know, whatever picks that he wants to make, Sean Payton, it runs right through him. I know Mickey Loomis is the GM here. Whatever he wants to sign as a free agent, it goes through Sean Payton. Whoever he wants to re-up on the team and make them and say, you know what? This guy's going to be a quarterback. I don't care if you don't think he can work. I'm going to pay him $1 billion, like it seems like Taysom Hill is getting each and every year as he re-ups and plays worse and worse on the field in his new digs as a starting quarterback. But at the same time, sometimes when you are a coach, you look around yourself and say, you know what? I built this thing up here in New Orleans to try to make sense of this and win another Super Bowl. I may have bitten off a little bit more than I can chew as we take a look at the salary cap ramifications coming up. I had a Hall of Fame quarterback for a long time in Drew Brees and used him right up to his arm, basically fell off. And then I said, you know what? I'm going to get younger. I'm going to get reinvigorated. I'm going to show you how smart I am. Taysom Hill is a great Swiss Army knife guy. I'm also going to bring in Jameis Winston and rebuild his career. Boy, this is going to be fantastic. I'm excited about the future. And you see Sean Payton now talking about of how taxing a season it was, whether he's displaced by a hurricane coming to town or saying, you know what? I may have found something here in Jameis Winston, only for him to tear his ACL, and now I'm left with my quarterback, who I told you can be a starting quarterback, but now it really must work out in my favor, because in order for Taysom Hill to have success, the organization needs to have success off the field, and I need to have success as a head coach in calling plays for Taysom Hill. So it's not an issue here to me that he might have a wandering eye, or, hey, I've been doing this for a long time. Maybe it's time for a year or two off or a new team or going to the booth. These are questions that we answer day to day in life when things aren't working out in your favor. That was a tough year. So it's not a surprise that Sean Payton's going, you know what? I actually need time to think about this year and what's best for me at this point.
Ultimately, the wrinkle that is Fox calling, needing a replacement for Troy Aikman, who's going to go to Amazon, is very interesting. But put that in the back pocket for just a moment, Donnie. Because the obvious connection for Sean Payton right now is going over and becoming the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys. We just came off talking about Aaron Rodgers potentially going to one of a bazillion AFC teams and maybe Tom Brady retiring. And I know you don't think anything's going to happen, but bear with me here, DRS. If both of those things happen and Sean Payton goes to Dallas, favorites to win the conference? No worse than second, right? Probably behind whichever team is going to win the NFC Championship game this Sunday. And at the end of the day, Donnie, Super Bowl windows are open until they close. And maybe the one in New Orleans is closed. And you go to Dallas, All of a sudden, it's open, at least for 1 year, if not more. And when you compare the situations, it's pretty obvious. As we bring the radio audience into the fold, and we appreciate all those who've tuned into the Early Line on Sports Grid Radio and across all Sports Grid platforms here on a Tuesday morning. It's Kevin Walsh and Donnie Wrightside talking about this Sean Payton news here. But Donnie, at the end of the day, right, and I know the salary cap is somewhat fake, but this is staggering to me. Dallas has the third least amount of cap space at under that minus $21 million, which is $15 million more than New Orleans. Outrageousness. You compare the quarterback situations. Dak or Taysom Hill or Jameis Winston coming off of an injury. It's not even close. Donnie, there's only 13 coaches in the history of the sport that have won multiple Super Bowls. And Sean Payton could very well become the 14th. Certainly has a better chance to, I would say, Donnie, in Dallas than it would be in New Orleans. Donnie, I line these two situations up, pros, cons list. This doesn't seem very close.
No, and even like, you have to add in as well, we haven't seen this in a long time where a coach is, sometimes when a coach gets fired, obviously he can go wherever he wants, where a coach that, you know, retires after his contract, sits out a year or two and then comes back. You know, Mike McCarthy, right, getting fired or being let go by Green Bay, resurfaces a year later. Sean Payton still has a few years left on his contract. And sometimes you look at, like, let's say the Peyton Manning situation, Kevin, in Indianapolis, where he's like, hey, we're drafting our quarterback. It's going to be Andrew Luck. We're going to do right by you here, which means we're not going to hold you hostage. We're not going to trade you to a team you don't want to go to. We're going to release you for, thank you for all your service to the organization. Go win a Super Bowl there in Denver, which Peyton Manning did. That's not going to happen with Sean Payton. They're not going to say, thank you, Sean Payton, for leaving us with, you know, $50 million in salary cap hell. And, oh, yeah, go enjoy life on a other team while we struggle here. That's going to be draft capital. And if you're, let's just say, the Dallas Cowboys, do you want to give up a first-round draft pick to get him as your head coach at that point here? That's something that you certainly have to take a look in, because the last time we saw, Kevin, was Gruden had a ready-made Super Bowl-ready team in Oakland and left for Tampa Bay, who was a ready-made Super Bowl team and ended up winning a championship. Those are a lot of food for thought here, Kevin, that we have to think about on does Sean Payton leave and how can he leave if the Saints don't want him to leave?
I will say as well, like, the roster's pretty strong. If I give up a first to get Sean Payton, might make some sense. We'll close this out. We'll start talking conference championship game odds next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Back right here on Dallas Cowboys, more, I guess, importantly, leave New Orleans situation, Don. Because I think we both agree that the two situations are not really close. You're obviously more likely to win a Super Bowl in Dallas. You just take a look at everything that's there. I know there's Jerry concerns and all, and I get that, right? Jimmy Johnson only lasts 5 years. Parcells only four. I get all that, okay? But at the end of the day, Donnie, maybe after a four-year run, you go to the booth. Where do you go now? One thing, Donnie, you've talked about a lot is the ability for people to just kind of make money in ways that people aren't, we haven't always seen. Is the college game more attractive than the pro game for coaches? And now, Donnie, the ability to just make money off-field compared to on-field tier. Any smoke equals fire in terms of Sean Payton all of a sudden sitting next to Joe Buck on Sundays?
There is a lot of smoke to that fire, because you're right. You take a look, and also, you know, there's some guys we can always use in these same equations. Look what John Gruden did. He went to the booth for a long time and made millions upon millions of dollars a year just calling football games, and then went back into coaching. It's not as if Sean Payton's like 70 years old and like, hey, this is my last go-around. I want to have one more year. Bruce Arians is basically saying, like, what, I got 1-2 years left? Let me enjoy this before I get out of town, and then I can retire. You're talking about a guy that has 2 years left on his contract with the New Orleans Saints. So I'm pretty sure, you know, the legalities of would be, okay, I'm going to retire. I'll go in the booth for 2 years, and then I'm technically not under contract for the Saints where they would, you know, have me under wraps. Now, they're not paying me, obviously, because I retired, mm-hmm. but after those 2 years are up, I can do whatever I want. And let's also take a look at the stress of the job in the NFL. This isn't a 9-to-5 job as a head coach. Like, you are working around the clock. So specifically, just taking a look at football season, Kevin, when you head into OTAs from maybe like May all the way through to the Super Bowl, let's just say you don't make the playoffs till the end of December. You're now taking like a week off and then right back into evaluation mode. How about if you make, let's just say, Sean Payton, I don't know his contract details, but he's been around the block and he's a great coach. So let's just say he's making in between that $7, $8, $9 million range, at least at the higher echelon of what NFL coaches make. He steps out, and you know what he does to the booth? Hey, look, I make $8 million right now to be the coach. You want me, and I know you do. Pay me that $8 million, and I'll leave. Why? Because I'm going to fly in on a Friday to the city where I'm going to call a game on a Sunday. I'm going to meet with team executives on Saturday to get some game pointers. Hey, who are you looking to throw? What are some special plays that you want to use? And then Sunday, calling a game for 4 hours, then flying back home and having 5 days off, and then you start the same cycle the following week. So if you take a look at as an NFL head coach, Kevin, you're basically working, let's just say 52 weeks in a year. Let's say 50 out of the 52 weeks, you are under immense pressure to get everything correct. And then I told you, hey, look, you're going to work 18 Sundays, then a couple more playoff games, and you have the rest of the year to relax with absolutely zero pressure and then show back up again in September. It's a wonderful life. Now, sometimes the coaches, Kevin, you get that coaching bug where you're a lifer, right? You love the grind. Like John Gruden always said, I love waking up at 4 a.m. and breaking down. I'm not even a head coach at this point, and I'm breaking down film at 4 a.m. Sometimes you need to step away to realize how much you love coaching. And it's not stepping away, Kevin, to go fishing and golfing every day. You're still in NFL. You're still meeting with coaches. You're still breaking down tape for those games and having fun and being in the business where you can step away and make just as much money as you did coaching with all that stress.
It's really interesting. Also, Donnie, maybe coaching's a young man's game. We make our way over to the conference championship slate.
Yeah.
Andy Reid's 63. And then Kyle is the next oldest at 42 years old. Both Zach Taylor and Sean McVay under the 40-year marker. Really interesting stuff, kind of talking about the evolution of kind of coaching within the NFL. But let's talk about these lines, Donnie. Let's get a sense of where these are now and where they might be going. We start in Kansas City in the AFC Championship game here, where the Chiefs are a full touchdown favorite, laying 7 to the Cincinnati Bengals, and the total checks in at 54.5. And I think the question to ask here, Donnie, is maybe an obvious one. Is this line more likely to make its way towards 6.5 or 7.5? I think it's fair if you go, not a cop-out, but I think it's fair if you say it ain't going anywhere, because if it goes 6.5, it's all Chiefs, and if it goes 7.5, it's all Cincy. Could you see it happening, though, Donnie, the hook entering the fold?
Yeah, it's like the blinker. When you turn on, you throw the blinker on the right, you know, you maybe make it a left turn and it blinks for a few seconds. And then when you turn, it recorrects itself. This is one of those games, Kevin, where you see the Cincinnati Bengals here to -110 at +7. It goes to 7.5, blinks for a couple seconds, goes right back to the 7. And also, if you're looking at the Kansas City Chiefs, -7, -110 here at the FanDuel Sportsbook, that goes to 6.5, blinks for a couple seconds, and then goes back to 7. It seems like the perfect line to put it at, because when you're betting, look, they're good football teams. They're in the AFC and NFC championship game. Nobody's getting to the stage going, boy, we're just in a learning mode right now, and Kansas City should pace us 41-14. I don't think that's going to happen. But you want to talk about a fair price in this game at 7? It seems like you're getting action on both sides of that. But it seems like players and handicappers that are looking here on a Tuesday going, boy, I really like the Bengals. You show me 7.5, you're going to get my money. I'm not going to dip in yet. And the same thing with the Kansas City Chiefs backers going, I like it at 7, but you flash that 6.5, I'm jumping in. So there are going to be times that you're going to be looking all week long, and there it is, 7.5. You better get in quickly because it's going to recorrect itself. So if you're asking me today, what's the line more likely to end up with on game day? To be honest with you, Kevin, I do think it's the actual Kansas City Chiefs being favored by more than a touchdown than just to say sharp money coming in on the Bengals and pushing that to 6.5.
I think it's, and I tend to agree, because I don't know how many people are desperate to lay 7 in a conference championship game. That's a lot. Cincinnati played them and beat them. Now, if you ask me, do I think that Cincinnati can win this game? I mean, of course, kind of, but not really. Yeah. You're going to beat the Chiefs twice, and this time now in Arrowhead? That's a hard, hard sell. And we've talked about it. Bet who you think is going to win. Played out again, right? If I'm not mistaken, this weekend, DRS, spread didn't factor in a single one of those games. The team that won is the team that covered. Correct. So the thing is, this is the second or third biggest number of the postseason. The Chiefs laid a bigger number to Pittsburgh, and then the Birds caught a bigger number. Ultimately, actually, I think it might have closed up at the same number when they played Tampa Bay with all the wild movement there. My thing with this, though, Donnie, and we talk about this as well a lot here on this show, and it's certainly within this segment, I still think you could get Cincy bets at 6.5, maybe even 6, maybe even 5.5. Because, again, Donnie, I think the Bengals are a team that people will gladly bet. Chiefs were on the ropes last weekend against Buffalo. The Bengals have beaten this team. It's that 7, Donnie. That's a Chiefs line, in my opinion. No doubt about it. Doesn't mean they win. Doesn't mean they cover. But that's a KC line when I see it, DRS.
And it is. And also, if that sounds like I'm knocking the Cincinnati Bengals, I'm really not, because I was thoroughly impressed that were they supposed to be a last place team in their division, they won it. Then they go to the playoffs, who they had never had any playoff success. They win a home game, and then they go on the road and win. But let's also keep in mind here, didn't play a great football game against the Vegas Raiders, who aren't a, you know, upper echelon super team that you're like, oh man, that was impressive. And let's also keep in mind, they played poor enough where the Raiders were driving at the end of the football game to tie that up. Now, you do go on the road and you play the top seed, which is fantastic, Kevin, that you actually beat them coming off a bye. But let's be real on that game. If Tannehill just doesn't implode and only has like one interception, they don't win that football game at all. So and he said, well, Donnie, you see Kansas City? Yeah, Kansas City played the Bills with Josh Allen, a quarterback, throwing laser beams all over the place, and they still won. So if both of these teams, Kevin, bring their average games, not their best games, their average games Sunday, it's really hard to bet against Kansas City in this environment here, because they have the pedigree. They've been here, done that before. And when Patrick Holmes is on, which it looks like that offense is on now, it's up to, you know, Cincinnati to keep up. And I don't know if they can, to be honest with you.
Look, the Chiefs had themselves also a substantial lead in that game in Cincinnati, is something that factors in. That game also, Donnie, very high scoring. We'll talk a little bit more about the total in this game, as well as the NFC Championship game, the third one between the LA Rams and the San Francisco 49ers. Does Kyle just have McVay's number? Break it all down next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Back here on the early line. Talking earlier. Let's close out Chiefs Bengals with this. Plenty of time to make picks. Just getting an early read here, DRS. KC and
make
Cincy totals 54.5. Too light? Too high? Just right. What do we think there? Where's the porridge? How's the temperature here on this Chiefs Bengals total at 54.5?
I think it's just right. I really do. I love Joe Burrow. He's probably going to throw for at least, what, 300 yards in this football game. But the fact of the matter is, it's still a championship game. It's basically 55 points to get over. And for those that say this, because who would look at these two teams, Kevin, and go, oh, I like the under? Nobody's going to do that. We'll take a look at some weather forecasts as the week moves on. But just looking at it today, keep in mind, you watch the Buffalo Bills and the Kansas City Chiefs light up the scoreboard. But you're talking to a guy that had the over and was watching that football game on a 4th-and-13, that if that ball gets knocked down, it doesn't go over the total. What, Donnie, they scored like 70? No. That game was not going over the total for one incomplete pass by Josh Allen on a 4th-down call. So as easy as the over looked like, oh, Buffalo and Kansas City got after it, it comes down to very few plays here to make that happen. 54.5 does seem doable, but at the same time, I'm not rushing to the window on basically a 55 in an AFC championship game.
No, I'll be honest. The early read is it feels a little too high at 54.5. I know they met. I know it was 65. That was in Cincy. We've talked about this, Donnie. The Bengals.
I think, though. Yeah.
Is the weather not looks? It doesn't look good.
42 degrees, no rain, light wind. So you're right on par with what you were seeing last week in that Buffalo Bills game. So it is decent scoring position. Scoring conditions. No doubt about it.
Yeah. I will say, though, but Donnie, I've picked on the Bengals twice so far with the pick six, double unders, and it's worked both times. The Chiefs have played 7 consecutive overs, which I think is actually about as impressive of a trend as you will find, because it's the Kansas City Chiefs, Donnie. Like, they're going to do everything they can to put those numbers out of reach. People are going to want to bet overs in Chiefs games, and they still can't. But the Bengals are 7-2 to the under on the road this season. You know, so That matters to me, DRS, when we're talking about Bengals games here. DRS, we running the pick six back again? Enough juice there in a conference championship?
Even in the Super Bowl. Even in the Super Bowl. Don't worry about it. We got people covered.
Ooh, we'll figure it out. Good, good, good. Now, we'll get to the NFC side of this deal here. Oh, yes. Yeah. We're teasing totals come Super Bowl time, baby. That's what I've been waiting to tease a total all year long. I haven't done it just yet. DRS, here's the deal. Rams-Niners. It's 3.5. The total's 46.5. Niners were dogs in both games. They won both games. The total split, but the Niners hit their team total in both of their victories. I'm almost speechless. Like, Donnie, is this a game where you just forget who you think's more talented and you just have to back Shanahan to beat McVay? They don't even technically coach against each other on, like, offense versus defense. Like, they're both offensive-minded coaches here. Is it a psychological thing? Donnie, how much does that factor in when we look at the game?
I mean, it should factor in that the 49ers continually beat the pulp out of the Rams, but you ask me like questions in like college basketball. Hey, how much you take a look at, the previous game that they played? Mm-hmm. A little bit, and it's the same way here, because I do think there's differentiating factors. When I just line these two football games, and I know, like, hey, it didn't work out well for, he thought like Green Bay would beat the San Francisco 49ers. Equated to like playing cards at a blackjack table, K-Dub. Sit down at the table, you get two face cards, the dealer shows a six. The dealer draws a 21. Oh, man, nobody on that table is saying, boy, I wish we had the six and the dealer had two face cards. Nobody's saying that up there. So you still have to put your best foot forward and say, here's what I have for each and every individual game. I have Matthew Stafford. You have Jimmy Garoppolo. Sean McVay and Kyle Shanahan basically are split here at the head coaching positions. But overall talent for a football team, player by player, it's the Rams by far. And I love George Kittle. And I love Deebo Samuel. I really love what they bring to the table. And Nick Bosa at defensive end. And Warner at linebacker. But when you're talking about, I just have a ridiculous front four with the Rams. And I have Matthew Stafford, not playing at a Detroit level, playing at an MVP level, exactly what I wanted when I traded for him. Manage the game, win round one in the playoffs. Go on the road, and when crunch time comes in, go out and beat the best quarterback of all time in his building. Mm-hmm. Checkmate here. Matthew Stafford's not coming into this game going, oh, man, boy, it was so tough playing the 49ers this year. No, they expect to win this game. So your original point that you brought up when we're capping this, in the playoffs, pick the winner and let the spread go wherever it goes here. Would you rather have the Rams sitting here at the FanDuel Sportsbook at 3 than 3.5? Yes. But as we sit here on a Tuesday, I'm still sticking with the Rams. They're the better football team, and I'll take my chances.
So there's a couple factors that I think is really interesting. First of all, it's 3.5 right now for the Niners, minus 120 on that plus 3.5. So I think you can read that juice right away and let you know it's more likely we get the flat 3 than a 4. You think, Donnie, about what happens if Cam Akers doesn't fumble, right, the first time? Mm-hmm. And they beat the Bucs by legitimately 4 touchdowns, which is what we were on our way to do. The Niners shouldn't even be here in this football game. This is 4, 4.5, maybe 5, because they were phenomenal. And here's the difference, though, in this quarterback situation. Jimmy Garoppolo, Matthew Stafford. Matthew Stafford can have meltdowns. Donnie, he's been awesome. No doubt, like, he has been wonderful in this postseason. Jimmy's been bad. Like, not passable, not, but it's all Kittle or it's all Kyle. He has been bad, Jimmy Garoppolo. I cannot wait to see what they hang that interception number this week, Don. The minus 148, still not high enough for the people there. Immediately found a Packer player at a critical moment because, of course, he did. I think it's one of those things, though, where if you line up on San Fran, it's just I have to trust the fact that every single time these teams play, the 49ers win. And I'll say, and I don't have the stats at hand, but I know last year the whole hard to beat a team 3 times thing got debunked because the Bucs play the Saints, and then everybody figured out that the trends didn't make sense. But then, of course, the Bucs didn't get beat for a third time. It was very, very funny how that all worked out, but it was kind of certainly talked about enough. Before we move over to the NBA side of it, Donnie, that total of 46.5, first thought, they should be able to get over that number. You tick it up 2 points higher, my thought would be, all right, let's talk more about it. But 46.5, Donnie, that seems very, very workable.
It does. Oh, wait, did you watch that game where the 49ers couldn't move the football? I get it. But again, you can't just take a one-game capsule and say that's going to, you know, enter into the next week. Let's also remember it was 0 degrees with snow in the forecast in a close game. And we talk about the running mate, which is so important here, Kevin. You may, how about even taking a look last week where you saw the Rams and the, you know, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers? You had a running mate in the second half because the Bucs turned up the gas and said, hey, you're going to have to keep on playing offense with us. That's going to take place in this game. You're also looking at as well, Kevin, two of the elite play callers in the NFL. Do you actually think that San Francisco's coming in this game going, hey, you know what? Let's just run the football and let the chips fall and see if we can hold out in the second half. No, you're expecting the Rams to score. And also, last week you played in 0 degree temperatures. This week you're going to play in a dome on a fast track. My first indication, same as yours. If I'm looking there at the 46s in that range, I'm going over that total as a first thought here early in the week for this NFC Championship game.
Man, what if Donnie and I, what if our pick sixes look similar? Usually, you know, we try and kind of, there's only limited options out there. We'll figure it out, though. Yep. We'll figure it out as the time gets closer. Let's talk NBA, though. Whew! Harden, Philly, the Nets, Simmons, my goodness gracious. So yesterday we get a report from The Athletic, Shams Charania, Sam Amick, that Daryl Morey is ready to sit on this Ben Simmons deal past the deadline because he thinks that he can bring over James Harden in the offseason. Now, we talk, the theme of this show today, Donnie, is does smoke equal fire, basically, right? A lot of rumors, a lot of speculation in the sports world. Well, interestingly enough, there were some reports that Harden might want out of Brooklyn pass around a week and a half or so ago. Harden, Donnie, for some odd reason, didn't take the extension, and a big one at that, that was offered to him by the Brooklyn Nets just this past offseason. Daryl Morey and he have a connection, Donnie. How do you feel when you hear the James Harden, Ben Simmons, 76ers, Nets talk?
There has to be, like, smoke where's fire, right? We know Ben Simmons is eventually going to be moved from the Philadelphia 76ers. Rich Paul and Clutch, they made it known, like, he's never playing there again. And the Sixers have made it known, well, if he's not playing here again, we're going to pick where he goes. And he might never play again under contract with us. We won't pay him, but we'll sit him on the sideline because if we're not getting equal value back. So when we take a look at the Philadelphia 76ers and this path that they've taken, Ben Simmons wants out. Let's see what's on the open market. You're getting feelers back. Like, how about just Brogdon and nobody else? Oh, no, we're going to pass on that. How about this? Kevin Love and 3 first-round protected picks. Yeah, we're going to pass on that. So now you're seeing some elevated trade packages coming back to the Sixers from what they started on. Let's also keep in mind, you're right, Daryl Morey loves James Harden, was with him down there in Houston and understands. Here's where I think this has a lot of legs, Kevin. This is one of those where you just keep hearing the saying, like, why would James Harden want to leave Brooklyn? He chose Brooklyn because he's going to play with two other ridiculously good players, and it's about winning a championship, and they can do it. Something must be amiss in Brooklyn because, number two, look at these reports that come out and how quickly stuff gets debunked, particularly from Kevin Durant's perspective. He loves to have his burner accounts run wild and then all of a sudden comment on his regular account, like, this is the dumbest report I've ever seen. Me and James joined forces in Brooklyn to win a championship here. This is completely false. Forget about James Harden saying it. But then again, looking at James Harden, even the Nets organization, I don't know where these rumors are coming from. Like, we love James Harden. He loves it here. That's the stupidest rumor we've ever heard of. Nobody is debunking this Harden to Philadelphia rumor at all or coming out saying it doesn't make any sense. So where there's smoke, there's fire. I think there's a lot more fire here, Kevin, than smoke.
Maybe it's my job then to debunk it. Right now, the best show on TNT is obviously AEW, All Elite Wrestling. But there was a former classic they used to run on TNT called Leverage. We'll talk Leverage. We'll talk whether this is really a thing that could happen or if Daryl Morey is just playing a very strong hand. We'll break it all down next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Back right here on A2. Live with you on the Sports Grid Network. Kevin Walsh, Donnie Wright side. Here's the thing, okay? James Harden, and the Philadelphia 76ers. Do I think James Harden wants to go to Philly? Maybe, but he already had that decision. It was a great piece of reporting done by The Athletic here. Really was. And Harden was said, do you want to go to Philly or Brooklyn? And it shows Brooklyn. Now, buyer's remorse is real. Sometimes that happens for people, no doubt, right? They said, hey, Donnie, do you want to work with old K-Dubs? And he said, listen, please, please, please. That's the absolute man in the arena. And now Donnie's been trying to, you know, reverse course ever since. To be honest, though, right? Is this feasible? In short, no. Technically, okay. He can't be a free agent. They can't sign him outright. He's not declining the player option and signing in Philly. Cap space can be fake in the NFL all at once. It's not that fake in the NBA. It's not happening. So it has to be a sign and trade. In what world are the Brooklyn Nets trading Harden to the Sixers? None of them? Zero of the worlds? That's not a thing that's going to line up here. And all of that has to happen while the 76ers take a risk that they will and squander Embiid, Donnie, who over his last four games is averaging 46 points per 36 minutes. You can't squander this. Here's the last piece that came out in that report, Donnie, that I believe is tremendously relevant. It says that the 76ers asked the Sacramento Kings for Tyrese Halliburton and a bunch of picks, and that they asked the Atlanta Hawks for John Collins and a bunch of picks. And what I ultimately think happens, Donnie, and I'll see your thoughts on this, is I think Ben Simmons is traded. And I think Daryl Morey plays the leverage perfectly here. And the offers get anted up because teams don't want to let this Ben Simmons deal get away from them and go to the offseason. And he gets back a return that makes them better this year and still gives them enough to wheel and deal for if he comes available, Harden, in the offseason. I still think Simmons is traded at the deadline here, and I think it's a mistake if he's not.
You're right, and this is probably going to be lengthy, but also you're right. He's playing leverage right now. We'll wait to the offseason. No, Daryl, we'll up it now. We want to get this guy at the trade deadline. That's all factoring into it. But also, when you take a look at the deal to the Nets, forget about the other, you know, the Kevin Loves we talk about, the Collins deal, or whoever, if he can get Dame out from Portland or take CJ McCollum and a package. Mm-hmm. If you look at the trade that would go down between the Sixers and the Brooklyn Nets from both organizational standpoints here, James Harden comes to Philadelphia. We have that guy that can finally work off of Joel Embiid, pick and roll, and abuse other teams. But also, you look from a Brooklyn perspective here. You get Ben Simmons, an all-NBA off-the-ball defender here that's willing to run up and down the court in transition. And, oh, yeah, in the biggest spots of the game, Kyrie, shoot all you want. KD, shoot all you want. I don't even want the basketball. I'll drive to the rim and kick it to you for three anytime you want. It's almost like a match made in heaven, Kevin, for both teams here. You get an elite defender and still have your two top scorers, and the Philadelphia 76ers get that elite score in the playoffs that they've been lacking in the half court for the past 5 years. It makes a lot of sense.
I will say, and to your point there, I've always found it absolutely tremendous. The likely reality that Simmons is a better fit in Brooklyn than if you remove like a Harden or a Kyrie. And I think there's certainly some truth to that. Let's talk Brooklyn. Let's talk Brooklyn. Let's talk Los Angeles Lakers. Anthony Davis probable, Donnie, tonight for the LA Lakers as they go to the Barclays Center as a road favorite here. You have got two teams. The Lakers are a 3-point favorite, 3.5. Kind of depends when you do the look in here. 226.5 is the total. DRS. These are two teams that are offering you legendary level of fade material. I know everyone wants to fade the Lakers. They are 3-6 against the spread as a road favorite. However, the Brooklyn Nets, 5-17-1 this season at home against the spread. It has been nightmarish here. So bad. And like Donnie, it's like, yeah, but they still have Harden. I'm pretty sure the last time I think Harden played at home by himself, they lost outright to the Oklahoma City Thunder, who can never win basketball games. It is a difficult spot, Donnie, to back any, really either of these teams on the spread. But I'll make one more trend note that it breaks my heart to bring up. But if I'm fair, even if people try and tell you I'm not. LeBron and Anthony Davis, Donnie, 15 games together against the spread in those 15. 2-12-1. I can't even fathom what that means. I really hope my research was very wrong, but I don't think it was. 2-12-1 when LeBron and Anthony Davis are on court against the spread, Donnie. Yeah, you probably just auto fade him. Oh my goodness, 2-12-1.
No, I mean, I understand your point here, but also you're taking a look. Look, it's hard to win on the road in any sport, right? But the Lakers are getting back a little bit of juice in Anthony Davis, and say what you want. The team looks forward to this. Circle the wagons. If he is the starter tonight, Kevin, right? You're looking at this game going, okay, if Anthony Davis is right, he's not going to play 35 minutes. Let's just say he plays 25 minutes. But that's a boost for a basketball team that now looks around the corner and goes, hey, look at this. Westbrook's out here. LeBron is out here. Anthony Davis is out here. Our bench is seemingly intact. If you just look at both rosters, Kevin, available for tonight, it looks like a steal for the Los Angeles Lakers. Now flip it over here to Brooklyn and say, well, why would you take them? Number one, they're at home. Sure, James Harden can go 25, 15, and 10 in this game to keep them close. But you look at the bench of what you're going to get from the Brooklyn Nets. Is LaMarcus Aldridge going to go 9 for 10 again and have an amazing performance to keep them in? And maybe the linchpin is actually Patty Mills in this game. Two out of the last three games, Kevin, sinking 5 or more 3-point shots. Like, if you break this game down to its simplest form here, let's just say James Harden goes nuts. Who else for Brooklyn has to do that? So are you just saying, okay, if Patty Mills goes 6 for 12 from 3-point range, they can hang around? What happens if he doesn't? Is it Cam Thomas, De'Ron Sharp, Bembry, you know, older Blake Griffin? I don't see the firepower enough for the Brooklyn Nets to hang around because, as I said again, James Harden can have a triple-double in this game, and they can still lose by double digits.
It's funny you mentioned the Patty Mills performance, Donnie, because that's basically exactly what happened when the teams played on Christmas. It was like, it's Harden by himself. Like, Anthony Davis obviously didn't play, right? But you're looking at it, and you're like, oh, this should be a Lakers victory. And then I think Patty Mills made like 7 threes. And it's like, yeah,
yes,
that's exactly how that goes. I'll say this. I look towards the total we mentioned. We just talked about that Christmas game there, and I think it can make some sense to play towards the over. There were 239 points, I believe, scored in that game, or 237 scored. Comparable lineup here. Lakers have played 7 of their last 9 over. The question certainly might be, how does Anthony Davis impact all of that? And one area it could impact, and one thing I cannot wait to see when it is posted, the LeBron James points prop. Locked into that offensive zone, as he's recently discussed, Donnie, averaging, you know, basically 30 points per game on the season. He was averaging less than 25 points per game when he and Anthony Davis were both in the lineup. What that looks like is fascinating to see here. And of course, Donnie, what's a minutes limit look like for Anthony Davis? It'll be great stuff to follow. One more thing I'll mention quickly in the NBA, legendary level of underaction probably in Warriors Mavericks. Total is 210.5. It's already been working its way down. They met this year. The score was 99-82. The Mavericks have given you unders at better than 70% on the season, and Golden State's at 65% or better. It's just one of those things. If they're playing, if they're not even playing each other, you just bet the under, but playing one another, I think you have to take the under. Let's go college basketball. I want to try and, you know, I don't want to fly through it. I want to give it its time. Some really good action here. I want to start actually late night, Donnie. Arizona and UCLA. We talk about numbers jumping out, right? One of my, you know, when college basketball, everybody knows, home team that is unranked lays a number right to a ranked opponent here. Now, this is not apples to apples, but it caught me by surprise. The Arizona Wildcats, Donnie, go to UCLA. And all of these preseason expectations for the Bruins that I wouldn't necessarily tell you they've, you know, completely whiffed on, still ranked 7th in the country, catching points from this Arizona team. What's your reaction when you see the Bruins and the Wildcats line up?
A really good game, and two teams that are going to be competitive, Kevin, as you head towards March Madness. But let's take a look at what makes sense in this game, set the table, so to speak. Arizona 16-1 overall, UCLA 13-2. Conference play, Kevin, take a look at this. 6-0 for Arizona, 5-1 in conference play for UCLA. Arizona on the road this year, 4-1. UCLA at home, 7-1. And keep in mind, a lot of these home games here for UCLA playing in front of empty stands. I don't know exactly what the protocols will be, but I'm going to probably assume that at Pauley Pavilion, not a lot of fans are going to be in the stands. If we take a look at conference play, which now you start to sink your teeth into some of these numbers, as I just pointed out, Kevin, 6 games in conference play for Arizona, 6 games in conference play for UCLA, and you know who's number one overall in efficiency in conference play on the offensive side of the basketball? That's Arizona. How about defensively, Kevin? Number one as well. So I'm going to get the best offense in conference combined with the best defense in conference. But here's where I think makes a lot of sense. UCLA is a very good basketball team. They are efficient in conference play. Top 4 in the Pac-12. But let's take a look to see what UCLA does really well in offense and also what Arizona does well. Let's take a look at turnover margin. UCLA, number one in conference play at not turning the basketball over. When you take a look at Arizona's defense, yeah, top five, top six. So not a huge effort here. We say, okay, we're going to really turn over UCLA. Arizona probably won't do that. But let's take a look here. Number one in conference play, Kevin, UCLA at getting to the basket and getting fouled. But you know what Arizona does the best in conference? Not fouling their opponent. So if you're talking at a team that's built on getting to the free throw line, a team on defense that's built on saying like, hey, we'll play at the rim, but we're not just going to throw bodies at you and put you on the line. Also, let's take a look at three-point shooting, which is so important in conference play. In the Pac-12, obviously there's 12 teams in conference. 10th overall in shooting the three-point shot, UCLA. Top five in the conference at defending it is Arizona. But here's the crux of the argument, which I think makes the most sense here, Kevin. UCLA, as we said, likes to get to the rim. You know, over 55% of the shots that they take, or excuse me, score, point distribution is what I mean. 55% of their offense, Kevin, doesn't come from the free throw line, doesn't come from the three-point line. It's inside the arc. You know who's number one in conference play defending inside the arc? That's the Arizona Wildcats defense, number one overall, holding teams to under 40% shooting inside three-point range. That is incredible stuff. So if we're taking a look and say, what makes the most sense in this game? It's going to be a close game, I get it. But honestly, I'm taking a look here at the UCLA team total under, which is listed at the FanDuel Sportsbook right now, at 74.5. If I think I'm going to get the best overall defense and I'm going to get a good matchup that says like, hey, look, not a great three-point shooting team and a really good defending team at the rim and doesn't put you on the free throw line, maybe you don't get those extra points here. Give me the under. I think they can keep on under 75 points in this one.
It's a high number when you talk about a defense, certainly of the caliber of Arizona, but it's a UCLA team that has been phenomenal at home this season in terms of scoring the basketball. Enough time to bring up the other ranked game today, DRS, and it's a good one. Mm-hmm. Illinois hosts Michigan State here. Now, you talk about a Michigan State team, Donnie, that's been very, very impressive on the road. Illinois been strong at home. The biggest question going into this game, will Kofi Coburn be in the lineup for the Illini?
That is a big question mark, and we're going to play that out. So let's just say, based on the statistics that we have available, keep it quick here. Michigan State, Illinois, number one defense in conference play for Michigan State. Illinois, number three. Also keep in mind, sometimes I'm going to look at the under, so I'll preface it quickly here. Under 145.5. Here's one of the simplest things here, Kevin. Both of these teams do not turn the opponent over on defense. And you say, well, why is that important? The quick runouts, Kevin, right? The pass that gets picked off for a two-on-one dunk, or, you know, just the heading down on fast break plays or turning it over at midcourt. If you don't get those easy points here, it's tougher to score. Both of these teams here, Illinois slows it down a little bit. I'm going to take the under, Kevin, 144.5 in this game, just to keep it short.
That'll be a fun one to follow. We'll be following those on In Play Sports tonight, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Start there, of course, on SiriusXM, channel 159. Closing out another fun edition of The Early Line with Listen Up right here on Sports Grid.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Last segment of the day for The Early Line here on a Tuesday on the Sports Grid Network, SiriusXM channel 159. Both myself, Donnie Wrightside, and Kevin Walsh carrying you through from 7 to 9 before we hand it off to Ben Stevens and KW over the next 3 hours. So you want to stay tuned to that. But before we do that, there is voting going on in the Baseball Hall of Fame. You people out there listening and watching, listen up. All right, a lot of stuff's going to come up today, and this can equate across, you know, all landscapes, basketball, football, baseball, but I like to talk about revamping the Hall of Fame voting process, and it's so simple to me. Why is it vague on who can vote for who and what they think a Hall of Famer should be? Why do we take account into stuff that happens off the field and try to equate it to on the field and who we like and who we dislike? And we're talking about the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame voting today, which might get David Ortiz into the Hall of Fame. Noted, there's a lot of discrepancies around a possible steroid usage early in the 2000s. That was never proven, But then again, what did we prove on Barry Bonds? Exactly what he had. Did he test positive? No, probably not. But did he come up for indictments there and the whole Balco scheme? Yes, he did. Or also taking a look at A-Rod, who said in a famous press conference, yeah, I took them for a little while, but they didn't really help me. So take that out of the equation. We're not going to do that here. So if we line up everything in Major League Baseball of what makes sense, why isn't it just the best players get in? And also keep in mind, I know there's ambiguity here of who used steroids, who didn't use steroids. There was a steroid era in baseball. Why can't we throw the asterisk up? Barry Bonds deserves to be in the Hall of Fame for what he did on the field. And for a time frame where you weren't supposed to use steroids, they weren't testing for it, and technically wasn't illegal in the sport. And he never tested positive. We probably know he did. You saw his helmet size go up, you know, three times here. As OK Dub would like to use here, a one pegger on his hat, which how big his head was. But at the same time, you still can't keep him out. And you can't put David Ortiz in. Enough with the shenanigans. Balance it out. Make it easier to vote. Whew. How about that for a segment here? You know what? Coming up, Ben Stevens and my guy KW right here on The Morning After for the next 3 hours. Make sure you stay tuned here to Sports Grid for the early line. Both myself and KW. Yeah, we'll be back doing this once again tomorrow. Have a great day.
What's up, fools? Main Event Jey Uso here from the WWE. When it's just me between matches, it's day one-ish. And that means it's Chumba time. With hundreds of casino-style games and new titles arriving weekly, there's always something fresh to try at Chumba Casino. The daily boosts make it even more fun. And have me about to get them all during my downtime. Ready for a fun way to chill out and enjoy a few minutes for yourself? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 15th through the 28th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.